We're continuing to think about what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount, following on from our sermon series on the Beatitudes. We've just sung about light. Peter's going to talk about that next week. We're doing the two famous elements, salt and light. Today, we're doing salt. It's just one singular verse we're thinking about from Matthew's Gospel, which is this. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And we saw a little bit of that in the video we saw earlier on. So let's have a little bit of a show and tell. Who likes salt? Oh, loads of people, okay. Who doesn't like salt? Okay. Salt is good for chips. For cheesecake? Well, there's salt in pretty much everything, isn't there? There are times when you just need a little bit, don't you, to make things taste better on chips and salt and vinegar crisps. There are times when you just need a bit of salt. But it's a bit out of fashion, as we know, because we know that too much salt is not good for you. It raises your blood pressure, apparently. We've been taught to look at those little red guidance signs at the bottom of food items to check how much fat's in something and also how much salt's in something. So too much is bad for you, and conversely, too little is not good for you either, because your body needs a bit of salt. Otherwise, you have leg cramps in the middle of the night. Who knew? Other things too, I'm sure the doctors will tell me later on, all the other things that you need salt for in your body. So Jesus continues his Sermon on the Mount, continuing his theme about what life lived out in the topsy-turvy, countercultural kingdom of God looks like. And he continues with something that all his listeners would know about. He continues his theme by looking at the influence his followers were to have in the world that they live. He uses something that they would know, salt and light. Two things everybody would know what they were. We're used to hearing Jesus using things from everyday life that people would be able to connect with. He talked about trees, he talked about rivers, he talked about soil and seeds, examples of things all around him. And salt and light are no exception. Salt was actually really important in Jesus' day, a bit of history. There's a saying that came from Pliny the Elder. The historians will be very pleased that I've done some homework. And Pliny the Elder, about the time of Jesus, said this: there is nothing more useful than salt and sunshine. So that's the theme sorted. Pliny the Elder has said, that's almost salt and light in a saying. Nothing more useful than salt and sunshine. Salt was really useful in Jesus' day. It was used as payment, apparently, for Roman soldiers, if they were good, if they were literally worth their salt, they'd get paid more. The Latin word, salarium, I've been working hard this week, means salt money. And from that word, we get the word salary. You all knew this, don't you? You're all nodding. We all knew this. Okay? It was somebody who didn't know this. Oh, good, that's okay then. It's news to me. Salarium, however we say it, was the money paid to Roman soldiers for their work. And they used it to either purchase salt, which they would trade in, or they were paid in salt. I wasn't quite sure by reading what it said on Google, because of course it must be true if it's on Google. So it was really valuable. It's a valuable commodity in the time of Jesus. So I'd like to suggest to you four things that salt is useful for, which says something to us as Christians in our daily discipleship in our world today. The first is purity. Salt has a purity to it. In the Roman world, it apparently was used to symbolize purity all the time. The Romans said that salt was one of the purest things because it came, as Pliny the Elder said, from the sea and from the sun. It was often used by primitive people in offerings, in worship. It was one of the sacrifices in Leviticus to God in the Old Testament. And it was apparently produced by using seawater and sun to filter the salt from the riverbed. Bit of geology for you. And usually that meant that it would be quite pure. But if it got mixed up and contaminated with the ground from around the riverbeds, it would lose its purity. Its saltiness would therefore be rendered useless. Jesus is using the example of salt in suggesting what the call and influence of purity that the Christian brings to the world in which they live. Earlier on in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about purity of heart. And here, he's talking about purity of life. We are to be unmixed from contamination of the world in order to have an irresistible influence on those around us. And now all of that's well and good, but what does that actually mean? Uncontaminated by the world around us. What does purity look like in the Christian world today, or in the world today? When I thought about this, I thought, well, that's a challenge. Does purity mean being set apart, perhaps? A bit like those purity rings that teenagers in America promise to wear when they save themselves for marriage. They're called purity rings. They deliberately set themselves apart. But the challenge of this verse, and those we've heard before in the Beatitudes, is the call not to be set apart, but the call to be stuck in. That salt only works when it's spread and sprinkled. It only works if it gets around, if it's circulated. Christians best work as salt in the world when they're involved in the world. So my question to myself and my question to you this morning is, what does purity in service and witness look like to you? What does not being contaminated by the world, but still living in it, look and feel like? This time on Tuesday, when we're all back at work, or whatever you're doing on Tuesday, what might that look like? Your purity in your everyday discipleship. Turn to your neighbour for 1 minute only and ask yourself, what might that look like to be pure as a Christian in the world today? Go. Has anyone got a revelation of something that might help us as a congregation? What does that look like? Anyone got something they want to share? Peter, everyone's pointing at you in the row behind. Was it terribly wise? I bet it was.
Trust and obey.
Trust and obey, okay.
Otherwise it's impossible.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Not being gossipers. Okay. Okay. Integrity. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Jim? Listening. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you. They were interesting. Thank you. I'd like to share a quote from one of my favourite theologians, Anne Morrissey. She's a community theologian. I've shared it before, but I think it's a really huge challenge. History will not be so kind to our generation of Christians if we allow the false consciousness of mainstream living to go unchallenged. History will not be so kind to our generation of Christians if we allow the false consciousness of mainstream living to go unchallenged. Now, I find that a challenge because I think all of us could say that we are part of the culture of the world around us. Some of that is good, but some of that is not, I would suggest. And I wonder if we've let the prevailing culture of our world kind of name us and shape us too much. Because we're called to be countercultural, to be people whose lives are marked out by the way that we live, by some of those things that we talked about, by integrity, by truth, by not gossiping, by people who people can go to and be heard and listened to. And the big things too, they'll know we're Christians because we're feeding the poor, we're transforming injustice in our world. They'll know we're Christians because of our love. The challenge of this is, do they know we're Christians? Do people look at us and go, I can tell they're Christians? Because they don't gossip. Because of who they are at work. I can tell they're Christians because they do friendship really well. I can tell they're Christians because they open up their homes. I can tell they're Christians because. Or do people see no difference and we just look the same as everyone else? The same standards, the same priorities in life. Salt was used because it was pure. Everything is a challenge to me before it's a challenge to you. Are we pure? Salt was also used for preservation in Jesus' day. They didn't have refrigerators. Food was salted to keep it from going off. It was a preservative. It stood in the way of decay. It slowed decay down. Becca and I, when Becca was in primary school, we did a science experiment for homework. We had to mummify a tomato. And we had to do that. We had to take pictures. We had to mummify this tomato for weeks. It took forever. By encasing it in salt to stop the air getting in, to stop something happening. I was no good at science. In fact, it all went horribly wrong, but that's another story. The idea was to stop decay, for the salt to preserve this poor, fragile little tomato, which ended up being about a raisin at the end of it. I don't think it should have happened. So, if salt is meant to preserve, what does that say to us? About, say, we're to help the world from going off. Is that a calling of ours? To challenge when we see things going slightly awry. to preserve things from corruption. If a Christian is to be the salt of the earth, he or she has a calling to have a bit of an antiseptic influence on life, to preserve. I read this. The call of the Christian is to be a moral disinfectant in a world where moral standards are low, constantly changing, or non-existent. What do you think to that? Yes? That's tricky, isn't it? And also, another commentator, Don Carson, says this. Implicitly, Jesus is saying that apart from his disciples, the world turns ever more rotten. Oh, crumbs. Christians have the effect of delaying moral and spiritual beautification. I've never used that word in a sermon. I can't even say it. Lovely. Do you see that as your role in the world? I'm thinking you probably don't. But Jesus is saying that's one of the things that salt does, is preserves things from going off. This is a very stark thing. He continues and he says, if our lives conform to the norms of the Beatitudes, we cannot help but be an influence for good in society. Now that sounds a bit like a call to action for me. That salt doesn't have to shout about being pure and preserving. It's just what it does. It's its reason for being. It doesn't make a fuss about it. It just gets on with it. What might that look like for us in the issues that we come across in our families, in our workplaces, in our communities, in politics, played out locally and nationally and internationally? A call to be pure and a call to preserve. What might that look like for you? The next thing is presence. You notice salt's presence. And you notice when it's not there. Salt gives flavor. If we are to live as salt, because it says something as a characteristic of God's kingdom, how are we flavoring the world around us? The job of salt is to lose itself in the service of the thing it's flavoring. In a dish, you're not meant to taste the salt more than anything else. It's there to bring out the flavor of the food. Salt is meant to make food taste more foodier. That's the aim of salt. And I think that's our challenge as well, that we are, Christianity is to life what salt is to food. We're there to bring out the flavor of God in the world, to bring out the best in it, to nourish and sharpen it, to bring out its colors and its vitality and its wholeness that God has put there, to bless and to be a blessing. Not to be killjoys, but to bring out real joy in the world around us. Because of the joy that we sing about at Christmas, because the Lord has come and we know it, and earth has seen her king. A king crucified and risen, a king who forgives and sets free, a king who transforms our life and brings new life to others, and is a message of presence and flavor in our world. And it's a challenge that we need to be salty and not insipid, made to be noticed and not invisible. Are you noticeable in your Christian life? I had a conversation very recently with someone who had been convicted with a chat she'd had with her work colleague who knew that she was a Christian, and he challenged her about why she never spoke about it. In the same way, all the people at work talk about what they'd done at the weekend, she never mentioned church or the impact of faith on her life. And he noticed that. And he said, why do you not tell us if this is the most important thing? And she was really challenged by that. And I'm really challenged by that, because it's a good question. If Christ has transformed your life, if Christ has set you free, if Christ has forgiven your sins and given you new hope, surely you would want to shout that from the rooftops. Who knows the story of Christ in your life if you don't tell it? If you've not let that salt be sprinkled in your story? You notice salt by its presence, which flavors and brings life. Do you? Do I? And finally, salt produces thirst. We know that because when we go to the pub and they give us peanuts, it's solely there to make us thirsty. It is solely there so we buy more drink. And the same at the cinema. The popcorn doesn't have to come in vats. It comes in vats, so you buy alongside it a vat of carbonated drink, because you will be thirsty after having your salty popcorn. Because salt produces thirst. It's true, isn't it? Robert Louis Stevenson said once in his diary, as if he was recording an extraordinary phenomenon, I have been to church today and I'm not depressed. He'd been to church, clearly was a good sermon day when he wrote that. He's been to church today and I'm not depressed. That isn't a comment about mental health, by the way. That wasn't how it was written. He'd been to church and it was a good day. As people thirsty for the spiritual water of life that we have found in Jesus, are people thirsty for what we have because of the influence that we've had on their lives? We're called to live lives of irresistible influence, and that's the nature of salt. It works when it's spread out, it works when it's sprinkled. How are we doing that? In the places that we live and work and volunteer, we work best as salt for the world when we're involved in it. What does that look like for you in your life? How are you salt in your life? How is your faith lived out in your workplace for those of you who work? What kind of employee or employer are you? What kind of colleague are you? What kind of friend and family member? Are you a cheerleader for others? Are you that person everybody knows that they're going to get a grump from? That they're going to get a challenge or a backhanded remark? You're the sort of people that people want to spend their time with because your presence changes others for the best. Are you a cheerleader or are you a critic? Do you find things to celebrate and praise? Or is your tongue sharper than a two-edged sword? I found this on Facebook yesterday. At the end of the day, the world will either be a more or less kind, compassionate and loving place because of your presence, your move. At the end of the day, the world would either be a more or less kind, compassionate and loving place because of your presence, your move. But it's more than that. Everyone can be kind. Everyone can be compassionate. Everyone can be loving. But that's not just our challenge. The challenge of our single verse today is the job that only we can do, that the world cannot. We are called to flavor the world with the taste of Christ. You are the salt of the earth, Jesus says. You are the light of the world. He uses the personal pronoun you. It is emphatic. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. In fact, the Greek sense of the word says you alone. It is not a shared task. No one else but you are the salt of the earth and the light of the world. No one else, says Jesus. No matter who you are, old or young, frail or flourishing, rich or poor, you are the salt of the earth. That is the job description of the church. And we do that not in our own strength, but in God's strength, by working together, by placing our footsteps in Jesus' footsteps. So that's the challenge today. Are we living the kingdom with a beatitude attitude? If you're being a Christian, you're going to stand out. Are you? Are you going to be noticed? Are you? Jesus says to us this morning that if we lose our distinctive saltiness by being quiet when we should speak, by going along with the crowd, by being invisible, then we have rendered ourselves useless as Christians. Unfruitful. Pointless, says Jesus, salt to be thrown away. And that's a challenge to me. And it should be a challenge to you, to the church, to us as individuals, as we live our lives as Christians in our communities, to live lives that speak of grace and mercy and the transforming power of God. It's a call and it's a challenge to get out there and be us at our best, because no one else can do that. You are the salt of the earth. And salt that remains in the shaker cannot have an impact. Let's pray together. Father, would you help us in this challenge to hear the call that you put on our lives to be salt, to speak when we need to speak with grace and with gentleness and sometimes with truth and power, to stand against that which is decaying our society and speak words of hope and truth, to flavour our world with the irresistible influence of Jesus. Would you help us do that as we are? Would you give us strength? Would you give us wisdom? Would you guide us? Would you guide our footsteps? Would you anoint our words? Would you give us spiritual insight in our daily walk on our front lines? That we would be salt. And that when it comes to the judgment seat of Christ, that you will say to us, well done, good and faithful servants.